Welcome to This Is Your Life with Michael Hyatt, where our goal is to help you win at work and succeed at life. My name is Michelle Cachette. I'm your co-host today, and I'm sitting in the studio with Michael Hyatt. Hey there, Michael.
Hey, Michelle. How are you?
I'm doing well. Today is one of those days, one of those episodes, when I am becoming 100% student. Today, we're talking about how to get help when you don't have a team.
Yes.
And
which a lot of people find themselves in that situation.
Absolutely. Because so many of our listeners are entrepreneurs, business owners who are working 60, 70 hour weeks. Yep. And they really are doing the job of maybe three or four people, but they don't have the finances or resources to be able to get
right.
a team. So today we're going to hopefully help them know how to be able to kind of operate as if you have a team and come up with some ways to delegate when they don't have a staff. However, before we dive into that, you have a fairly large team now. We were talking about this earlier, but it hasn't always been this way, correct?
No. I went from a really large team, you know, 650 employees at Thomas Nelson, where I had two full-time assistants, and it was awesome.
Mm-hmm.
The downside of that was I didn't know how to do anything.
You had a team, but you didn't know how to do anything.
If I had something that needed to be overnighted, I gave it to one of my assistants, uh-huh. and it was on its way.
But then they were out sick, you were like totally in trouble.
I was totally lost. So then I went from that to being a solopreneur, uh-huh. where I didn't have anybody, not even an assistant. Now all of a sudden I need to get something overnight, and it's like there's nobody to hand it to. It's like, what? You know, I had to find where the FedEx box was uh-huh. and learn how to fill out those forms on my own and all that stuff.
You go from feeling king of the world to feeling like an idiot about that fast.
And so I had all this stuff to do and was suddenly drowning in mm-hmm. work. And there was a lot of opportunity. You know, that was the good news. The bad news was I couldn't work fast enough to keep up with
yes.
all the work. And I was drowning in it. And I thought, man, if this is what it means to be an entrepreneur, I'm not sure, so sure I want to sign up.
Mm-hmm.
But today I have about 15 people and people that specialize in different aspects of my business.
Mm-hmm.
But what it's allowed me to do today, and I think this is the vision for where people can get to eventually, and for some people, they're going to say to themselves, I could never do that. And I just want to say that's a limiting belief.
Yes.
Okay. So indulge yourself and think that whatever we're going to talk about today is going to be a temporary mm-hmm. solution in order to get you to the place where you've got a team. Because if okay. your dream does not require a team, your dream's not big enough.
Okay. Say that one more time.
If your dream does not require a team, then your dream's not big enough.
Hmm.
So if it's just something you can
that's
do on your own.
That's a big statement.
Without your team, I know it is a big statement,
mm-hmm.
but I really believe it. And I believe that what we need to be about is creating outcomes and impact in the world that requires more than just our ability,
yeah.
more than our smarts, that takes a team to mm-hmm. do that. But in the meantime, you got to survive, right?
Yes.
And so that's what we're going to talk about today. Because what I'm going to share today is really came out of that time when I was a solopreneur trying to figure out how I could get by until I could afford an assistant and
yes.
begin to build a team.
And I have to say, that's so reassuring for those of us who don't have a 15-person team, just to be reminded that you've been there.
Mm-hmm.
You know what that feels like. It hasn't always been this big team for you. And so you have a great empathy and you have some great strategies for us to learn how to be able to delegate when we don't have a staff. All right, so let's go ahead and dig in. Delegation is, we've talked about delegation many times at This Is Your Life, but it's both a skill and an art.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're gonna help us to unpack all of that. What is the first strategy for building or delegating when you don't have a team?
Yeah, the first one is to triage your to-do list. Okay, so not everything on your to-do list is of equal weight.
Okay.
And so triage comes from a medical term that's used mm-hmm. on the battlefield.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you go in after a battle and there's the aftermath. There are patients that no matter what you do, they're going to die.
Mm-hmm.
There are patients that no matter what you do, they're going to survive. So to deploy medical resources in trying to save people that are going to die
mm-hmm.
or attending to people that are going to do okay and they're going to make it is a waste of resources. The ones you need to attend to are the ones in the middle that
yeah.
without medical attention,
mm-hmm.
they likely will die or something bad's gonna happen. Well, the same thing can happen with your to-do list. You know, there are items that no matter what you do, you know, it's gonna get done, or no matter what you do, you're not gonna affect the outcome. So what are the items on your to-do list that really require your attention in order to affect the outcome? What are the really important things? It may not be urgent, but what are the important things that are going to move the needle forward and enable you to be in a position where you can hire a team? Mm-hmm. So, for example, if you get caught up in a lot of tasks that don't generate revenue as a solopreneur, a lot of stuff that's just busy, and I mean, people will keep you busy providing free information, mm-hmm. answering requests, whatever. If you do a lot of that and you're not doing the stuff that's going to generate revenue, you are doomed to stay in that situation forever. You know, it's kind of the proverbial or metaphorical situation where somebody's so busy fighting the alligators that they don't have time to drain the swamp.
Oh, that's a good metaphor. So, and I found myself, I make that mistake quite often. I mean, I've done that many times myself, where you get so caught up in kind of what seems immediate.
Yep.
But, you know, I'm dealing with a bunch of random details rather than going to the heart of what I do.
Well, and it keeps you from doing those things that are important.
Yes.
Which, again, is digging yourself out. Because I really believe that we're the happiest when we can focus on what we're uniquely qualified and
totally
able to
agree.
Do. So today I focus on about three things, and that's it. The staff handles everything else. But it didn't start there. I was doing everything from invoicing to booking my travel to handling every email request all the rest. But if that's all I did, and I just didn't say, look, stop the madness. You know, these people can wait, but I've got to give attention to the things where I can really affect the outcome here. And so in those early days, it was like, you know, getting more speaking engagements, mm-hmm. doing more consulting, stuff that generated the revenue so that I could afford to hire an assistant and then another assistant mm-hmm. and the team that I have today.
Excellent. Okay, so you begin the first strategy for learning to delegate without a staff is to triage your to-do list. What would be second?
Yeah, I want to say just one other thing on triaging your to-do list. Another book, somebody that you and I have interviewed is Greg McKeown.
Yes.
And he's written the book Essentialism, mm-hmm. which is an extremely valuable book. And I think it provides a grid, a way for you to evaluate your to-do list and say, okay, wait, if I look at all these things, because I don't care where you are on your entrepreneurial journey, there's always, always, always more to do than you've got time to do it.
Yeah.
You're always going to leave the office at the end of the day thinking, I could have worked another 2 or 3 hours.
Mm-hmm.
You're always going to button up things on Friday. Hopefully you do that. And you're going to say, I could work through the weekend and I still wouldn't be done.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and you get to Sunday night if you work through the weekend, and there would still be more.
That's right. And then you're exhausted going
way.
Into the
yes.
week. So you've got to determine what's essential, and Greg's book will help you do that.
Okay.
So
great advice.
First
Moving
strategy.
On to the second strategy.
Yeah, the second strategy I would say is use technology more effectively. And the first one really pertains to, you know, if you can possibly delete it. But now we're talking about if you can possibly automate it. You don't want to automate it first, because you don't need to be automating tasks that shouldn't be done in the first mm-hmm. place. But once the tasks that are left, that are survived, a lot of those can be automated with current technology.
Okay.
For example, my accountant last week said, I need to get all those Facebook ad receipts that are going to your account. And I also need to get your Amazon receipts, and I need to get your iTunes receipts, because we need a little more specificity in the books.
Okay.
And so I here's what I could have done. I could have gone back through my email archive and manually forwarded every one of those to her.
Yes.
Instead, what I created using Gmail was an email filter that said, every message from now on that looks like this, that's from this sender, mm-hmm. with these two words that are in the subject line, forward those on to Raquel, who's my bookkeeper.
Okay.
And so I did that once and I'm done. So I've automated something, rather than putting myself in the position of having to continually do this time after time, and there'd be times when I'd forget and mm-hmm. all the rest. Mm-hmm. So you want to use technology more effectively, and that's an effective way to do it.
And it may take some time for you just to, you know, maybe an afternoon where you just have to think through, okay, what can be automated? I mean, it takes some intentionality to do that.
It does.
So you invest a little time up front to save time later.
Well, and the candidates for that are anything that you do on a repetitive basis. You got to ask yourself the question, could this be automated? Like in another episode, we've either talked about or going to talk about, I've lost track now, but email templates for
yes.
responding to requests on your
mm-hmm.
time. So that's a fantastic thing you can do as well, because it's a repetitive task that using the computer, using email signatures, you can automate that.
Yes.
Or here's another one. When I get a voicemail message, what happens to that? Do I need to call my voicemail service and retrieve that message and then decide to do with it, what to do with it? No. What I do now is I use an email rule so that when Google forwards that message to me, it goes not to me, but to my assistant.
Okay.
And she can decide whether I'm the one to handle it or somebody else needs to handle it. Mm-hmm. And it's very rare that I ever see those.
Mm-hmm. For those that don't have an assistant, is there a way to be able to set that up so the email comes and gets filed in the right place so it makes it easier
Sure.
for you to go through?
Like one of the things you could do for email messages, let's just say that you're on the phone a lot.
Okay.
And you get a lot of return phone calls and a lot of email messages. Well, you could get the voicemail function of Gmail or Google Voice.
Okay.
And you could have all those forward as emails to your account, and you could put those into a folder so that when it comes time to return some phone calls, you look in that folder and you have them all queued up right there.
Mm-hmm. Saves a bunch of time. Okay, good advice. So triage your to-do list and then use technology more effectively, which I could certainly work on that myself. Okay, what is the third strategy?
Third one is to negotiate out of previous assignments.
Okay.
Now look.
Explain that one.
Okay, so to me, my word is sacred.
Mm-hmm.
If I tell you I'm going to do something, mm-hmm. I'm absolutely going to do it. Mm-hmm. If I don't do it, I'm going to own it, mm-hmm. you know, because I really believe my word is sacred.
Yes.
And I expect other people to keep their word. To me, that goes to the essence of integrity.
Yes, integrity.
So I want to make sure that my actions line up with my words.
Okay.
We may have done an episode on that in the past. I don't know. But that's important. However, that doesn't mean that you can't attempt to negotiate out of commitments that you've made.
Okay.
Because when we make that commitment, we don't have all the facts at our disposal. You know, it may cost more than we thought it was going to cost.
Yes.
It may require more time than we thought it was going to require. There may be 1,001 things that are different once we get into it, and so we can attempt to negotiate out of it. Now, I still believe if I can't negotiate out of it, and then the person says, nope, you said you're going to do it, and I expect you to do it, I'm on the public record, I'm going to do it.
Yes.
Even I'm going to do what I said I'm going to do, even if it's expensive, inconvenient, or difficult.
Okay.
Okay, so that's like my mantra.
Yes.
But that doesn't mean I won't attempt to negotiate out of it.
So give me an example of that so we can kind of play that out in our heads. What would be an example? Here's an example. Somebody asked me to endorse a book, and it's the endorsement is due right about the time my own book is due.
Yeah.
So I'm wrestling with, I know what it's like crunch time, right? As you're getting
right.
ready to turn that book in. How would I negotiate out of that? If I initially, you know, because I tend to say yes, and then how do I negotiate out
well,
of that?
Well, here's the cool thing.
Like?
Sometimes it doesn't even matter. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yes.
you might write to that person and say, hey, look, I'm kind of in a jam here. I know I told you that I'll endorse your book, and I will endorse your book. But my own deadline of my book is due during that same week or whatever it is.
Uh-huh.
And I just wonder, would it matter if I did this a week later? Because that's what I'd like to propose back to you.
Okay.
Now, what the other person might say, no, it's no big deal.
Okay.
So you've had all this anxiety
about
how you're going to get it done.
We do, right?
And this happens all the time. Uh-huh. And I say, no, I don't care if you do it next week. In fact, take 2 weeks.
What about a speaking engagement? Something that's a little bit bigger.
Yeah.
What would you do with that? Trying to negotiate?
Well, it depends on when you're figuring out you want to renegotiate it.
Okay.
Now, are you talking about renegotiating that you're going to do it at all? Or maybe...
Well, I'm just throwing that out there as a possibility. What if somebody, maybe it's scheduled a year from now. You know, we booked speaking engagements so far ahead. And then they found out, I'm just randomly thinking that family vacation at the same time. Do you still just follow through on that? Or is it possible to renegotiate?
Well, I would be willing to follow through on it because I gave my word to that. And the fact that I didn't get my calendar done and didn't put the big rocks in first, like a family vacation, which takes mm-hmm. priority over mm-hmm. everything else, I got to own that's
okay.
my fault. Okay. However, I would write to him and I would just say, look, I got a problem. And, you know, we're a year out and I just wondered, I really would like to go on this with my family if I can.
Mm-hmm.
If I can't, you know, let's say they have promotion out or you're the big speaker for the event.
Okay.
Then you might have to follow through.
Might have to do it.
And
okay.
you might have to, you know, have the hard discussion with your spouse and say, look, I screwed up. But as you know, integrity is really important to me. And I've given my word to this.
Yes.
And so I'm going to fulfill it. I'm not happy about it. I know you're not going to be happy about it. But I said I would do it. So I'm going to do it. And trust me, it will never happen again.
Well, the interesting thing, again, we're talking about how to delegate without a staff. But the interesting thing is those of us that are in the position of kind of being the one-man show with a growing business, is these kind of things happen. We end up stumbling and get stuck and we don't always make the best decisions. So it's good to know there are some options that we can at least attempt.
There are, and I think nobody's going to fault you for asking, mm-hmm. especially when they know your heart is to fulfill your word and keep it. And so to ask is not a problem.
Yes.
You know, we always get in, we get often get in situations where it just requires more, it's bigger, mm-hmm. it's more difficult than we thought. And to just ask the question, because a lot of times I've just found it just, it doesn't matter as much to that other person as we think.
Yeah, so many times that's absolutely the case. Okay, what would be the fourth strategy for delegating without a staff?
Okay, the fourth one is to ask for volunteer help.
Okay.
You'd be amazed at how many people would be willing to help just because they love you, they believe in what you're doing, they would like to have a part in it in some way. You know, I wouldn't abuse that on my side of it, but there's everything from interns, and this, by the way, can be a little bit controversial because there is a lot of abuse of interns where you're not really giving anything of value to them. But for some people, they would just, they would love to shadow you and learn what you learn and to be in situations that they could never put themselves in themselves. But if they're willing to help and be a volunteer if they just had the opportunity. So I wouldn't dismiss that. And the other thing that I love about that is that it's a way to mobilize your tribe. Because there are people that maybe follow you in social media or whatever, and I'm talking about people that produce content like us, but there are people that feel like you've been giving them all this stuff for years and they would love for a way to give back, a way to be part of the larger mission. And all they need to be is ask.
This is a novel idea for me because it never even occurred to me to do this. But recently, two of my friends have done that where they've solicited the help of volunteers who were more than eager to help out. One has an intern, the other one has an assistant that's doing it as a volunteer because she just simply believes in the person that she's working for.
And a lot of times we think, well, this could only help in a nonprofit context. Not true. This could happen in a for-profit context. I'll give you another example. Tony Robbins, one of the things that he does at his big conferences, and he has these amazing conferences, and he has a lot of volunteer help. And they call it crew. And so what it means is that you get to come back to that same conference again and work, you know, be somebody that's setting up and helping, but at the same time you get to attend the conference again. And people love to do that because they get a t-shirt, they get to feel like they're part of a larger community. Plus it's a way for them to give back to something that they received much more than what they paid for.
Absolutely. Great advice. Okay. Today we're talking about delegation for those without a staff. We still have three more strategies for you. We're going to hit those in just a moment, but stick with us. We'll be right back.
If you're like most members of my audience, you're committed to winning at work and succeeding in life. But the truth is, you struggle with finding enough time to do it all. And that's exactly why I wrote my new ebook, Shave 10 Hours Off Your Work Week, 4 Proven Strategies for Creating More Margin for the Things That Matter Most. You can't buy Shave 10 Hours Off Your Work Week, but you can get it for free by subscribing to my free email newsletter. My email newsletter notifies you whenever I've posted fresh content to my blog, so you don't always have to visit my blog to stay up to date. To get your free copy of the Shave 10 Hours Off Your Work Week ebook, visit michaelhyatt.com and enter your name and email address into the form on the page. If you're tired of feeling like there's never enough time to get it all done, don't miss your chance to discover how to reclaim the margin you deserve. Sign up at michaelhyatt.com.
Today we're talking about delegation for teamless leaders. You may not have a staff, you may be working way too many hours every single week, but Michael has some strategies for you today to be able to delegate even if you don't have a team. So far we've talked about 1, triage your to-do list. 2, use technology more effectively. 3rd strategy, negotiate out of previous assignments. And 4, ask for volunteer help, which is mind-blowing to me. I think this is the one I'm going to take home and apply myself,
good.
Which I love. Okay, let's dive right into the 5th strategy.
Okay. It's to use variable cost alternatives. And this is what I mean by that. We live in an amazing time, Michelle. It used to be that as a business person, I thought if I wanted help, then I had to hire somebody, you know, full-time. And that was always such a hurdle, especially when I was a solopreneur, because I thought, I don't want to take on the additional overhead.
Yes.
You know, there's so much uncertainty as to the future of my business, and I'm just not sure that I can afford it. But then I was approached by a company called EA Help when I, you know, kind of threw up a white flag of surrender and said, I got to have help.
Which I love the people at EA Help. They're
yeah,
great.
They're fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
they're
so EA, you can find out about them at eahelp.com. Mm-hmm. But they're a virtual assistant company. So they provide virtual assistants for as few as 5 hours a week.
Yes.
Okay. There's some other ones out there. There's a company called Fancy Hands, mm-hmm. Where you can buy a certain number of tasks mm-hmm. to be done. But these are variable cost alternatives. And what I mean by that is that if you only need 5 hours, you can
yes.
buy 5 hours.
And do you, I think, okay, just from a financial standpoint, you pay per hour, but you don't have to pay the same as if you have an employee, correct?
That's right.
You don't have to worry about workman's comp and some of those things. Is
equipment,
that true?
Equipment, all that mm-hmm. kind of stuff, because the virtual assistant's going to come with that. You're going to, in essence, pay for that. And if you go to a virtual assistant's company, you're going to pay kind of a surcharge.
Yes.
But here's what you get out of that.
You don't have to deal with all of the details of that.
You don't even have to find the person and hire them, which is mm-hmm. going to be a really time
Absolutely.
Consuming thing for an entrepreneur that doesn't have time anyway. So I think it's a good bridge alternative. You could also find somebody that was part-time.
Uh-huh.
But here's what happened to me. So I hired Trisha for 5 hours a week. I think, oh my gosh, if she could just...
By the way, I love Trisha.
She was fantastic.
She's excellent.
But she runs EA Help now.
Yes. Oh yeah, it's true.
Yeah, she was so good that she got promoted. She's the president of the company.
You gotta love those kind of stories where
I
you start out yeah. as the assistant and you move up and head up the company.
Yeah, well, that's how good she was.
Uh-huh.
I miss her. But Trisha did a great job. But what were we talking about there?
We were talking about how it kind of bridges. They take care of it.
Oh, yeah. So she was doing 5 hours a week. So I just gave her my inbox. I said, look, I'm going crazy. I'm getting so many email messages, mm-hmm. and I want you to book my travel. Well, that lasted about 2 weeks. Because what I found was that freed up 5 hours a week that I could do higher level mm-hmm. income-producing activity. Because the truth is, I had somebody managing my email inbox, and I had somebody booking my travel, but I was paying them twice as much as I was paying Trisha. That would be me, right?
Exactly.
So I was basically a high-priced, not very good assistant to me.
So you fired yourself and you hired Trisha.
So I fired somebody else and freed me up to do the stuff that really generated
yes.
the income. So that lasted about 2 weeks. Then we went up to 10 hours a week and then 20 hours
a
week.
It moved very quickly because the value was so high.
And guess what? My income went up in tandem with that.
Yes.
So the more
Which is
I turned
hard
over,
for most of us to
is.
Believe because it feels like such a gamble to make a commitment to pay somebody when you're not sure you'll be able to recover that. But if you leverage that well and use that time that it frees up, you make far more per hour than what
totally.
You're paying out.
So we had a guy in our Inner Circle Mastermind, which is a group of guys that I mm-hmm. lead. We meet once a quarter here in Nashville. And so one of the guys we determined is, and not everybody's going to be in this situation, but this is just his situation. One of the guys asked me, he said, how much do you make an hour? I mean, if you take all your annual profit, you mm-hmm. know, what you pay in taxes and all that, what do you make an hour? And he said, well, about $500 an hour. That's a lot, right?
Yeah, I think that's crazy.
And so this guy was struggling because he was doing a lot of his computer programming, doing his own programming. Uh-huh. He has an online business. And so the person who was interrogating him, one of his fellow members in the mastermind said, well, let me ask you a question. Would you pay a programmer $500 an hour? And he said, heck no. And he said, well, guess what? You already are. And by your own admission, he's kind of second rate.
Oh, I love
and
that.
So,
that's such good insight.
Oh, well, so
did he accept the advice?
Oh, totally. I
good.
Mean, just like,
good for him.
It was like a Copernican revolution in his
uh-huh.
head.
Uh-huh.
You know, he suddenly realized, you know, that the earth rotates around the sun. So he said, the other guy asked him, he said, well, how much would you pay a really good programmer that knows how to do what you need to have done? And he said, probably about $100 an hour. He said, okay, so if you pay him and it frees you up to do this activity that can generate $500 an hour, you're still making a $400 profit.
So why wouldn't you do it?
Why wouldn't you do it?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he immediately went out and hired somebody.
That's so smart. I had something similar where, I mean, it's different, but I knew what my hourly rate was for coaching and speaking
yeah.
and writing and all of that. At the same time, I was still cooking all of our meals and cleaning my house. And, you know,
okay.
so you're...
I know where this is going.
Yeah.
Keep going.
So here I am with four kids still at home, working full time, taking care of everything. And because I felt like some obligation to... You know, I wasn't above doing those things. So I'm happy to do
yeah.
them. There came a moment where the 5 or 6 hours I would spend cleaning my house every weekend, which was my only time with my family, and what that was costing me, and I could make that in work time during the week and more than pay for it. And finally, my husband and I realized it made sense to have somebody clean our house to free me up to do what only I could do. And then our time on the weekend became about family time.
Yeah, absolutely. I've had the same conversation with Gail in years past, and it was real hard for her to hire a housekeeper.
Oh, it's very hard
for
me.
She just felt guilty. She said, this is something I should be able to do, you mm-hmm. know? And I said, yeah, but it doesn't free you up to give, to do your best and highest work, you know, love it on the grandkids and painting, some things that she really loves to do. And what really convinced her was I said, besides that, you are depriving somebody of work that they need the income.
Yes. And that they do they, very well.
They might enjoy it.
Yes.
And you're depriving these people of work. So now she has a totally different view mm-hmm. of hiring help because she realized it's a way to bless other people, to get them in their sweet spot, and to free her up to do more of what she does best.
Yeah, that's been it took me decades to get to that place, but it has been one of the best decisions our family has made. All right, so use variable cost alternatives. What is the sixth strategy?
Sixth strategy is to appeal for more resources, and this really applies in the corporate world.
Okay.
You know, there may come a point when you realize that you've done all these other strategies, all these five previous strategies, you still have too much to do, okay? So at some point, you have to appeal to the boss for more resources. But there's a very specific way you need to do it. It never can be about how you need to relieve yourself of this work because you're overworked, you're overwhelmed.
Yeah, that doesn't usually go over very well. It sounds kind of whiny and negative.
Yeah. So what I've always tried to do when I'm trying to sell my boss, back in the days when I had a boss, was to try to show them where it was in their best interest.
Absolutely.
That if we could hire this other person, that obviously would solve my needs mm-hmm. For more resources, but it would be good for the corporation.
It would increase sales or maximize productivity or...
Exactly.
Yeah.
So you gotta frame it in terms of how it's to their benefit. Mm-hmm. So that's the key. If you can do that, you can sell anybody anything.
It's so true. I mean, this one concept of framing it to the other person's benefit works in the book world. It works in the corporate. I mean, this is so powerful.
Works with your spouse?
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely.
Not that I've ever used it. But.
Well, what you're doing is putting yourself in the other person's shoes.
Yeah.
And so you're finding a way to serve their interests while you're serving your own at the same time. All right. So appeal for more resources. And then number 7.
This is the toughest one of all, but it's really important. Mm-hmm. Summon the courage to say no. You know, it kind of loops back to where we were about triaging your to-do list, mm-hmm. except it's easier to do if it never makes it to your to-do list.
Yes.
So all those requests, and here's the deceptive thing. If you ask me to do something that's off in the distant future, good chance I'll say yes. Mm-hmm. Because it just isn't that consequential right now. It's easy to say yes mm-hmm. to something in the future. The problem is when I do that, I get to that future, and then I hate my life.
Yes.
Because I'll sometimes look on my calendar. It doesn't happen much anymore, but I used to look on my calendar. I'd see somebody whose name I didn't even recognize. I'm like, what? I'm having lunch with this person on Friday? Who is this person? Mm-hmm. And then Susie or Trisha back in the day would say to me, well, that was somebody some acquaintance that wrote in, and you said you wanted to have lunch with them. And I'm like, I don't have time to have lunch with that person. But now I have to because, like I said before, I'm going to keep my word. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to go with a smile on my face and try to be as helpful as I can. But if I had summoned the courage to say no then, it probably would have been that big a deal to them. And I would have saved myself all that grief in the future. So do the courageous thing. I think saying no in a world of opportunity like we live in today, saying no is one of the most courageous things
Absolutely.
Any person can do. Because and here's why. It means that you're really trusting that's not the last opportunity you're going to see. Because we can get in a place where we're operating out of scarcity.
Yes.
You're like, if I don't say yes to that request to write that article, if I don't say to that request to be on that podcast, this pretty soon all the requests are going to stop, and then I'm going to be isolated here, and I'm going to be broke. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's like, nobody would say it out loud like that.
But that's what ends up happening.
That's right. It's mm-hmm. just fear. And so we have to confront that. And Gail has this saying that I love.
I love that. So
whenever we say no to something, or have to say no to something, she always says, you know what? There's more where that came from.
Oh, I love that.
And it's just a reminder of abundance.
She has some really good mottos like that.
She does.
Really helps to reframe or, you know, shift the perspective on things that we end up being trapped by.
So we have to if we're going to be successful at this, I think we've got to operate out of a position of abundance.
Yes. Muster the courage to say no. Okay, we have talked about 7 strategies to learning how to delegate when you don't have a staff. I'm going to go through all of those again just to recap. 1, triage your to-do list. 2, use technology more effectively. 3, negotiate out of previous assignments if you can. 4, ask for volunteer help. 5, use variable cost alternatives. 6, appeal for more resources, again, if you're in an environment where you can. And 7, which might be the grand finale here, the most important, muster the courage to say no so you don't find yourself even in the position of needing to triage. All 7 of these strategies are ways for you to delegate, even if you don't have a team. So hopefully, and we talked about this before, it's a temporary solution. We want you to move toward eventually having a team because you're dreaming so big that a team is an absolute must as part of the equation. But in the meantime, these are ways for you to delegate without having that staff. Well, if you enjoyed today's episode, you can find the full transcript as well as all the show notes at michaelhyatt.com. In addition, you can go to that same website, michaelhyatt.com, to find the video of this episode if you'd rather watch instead of just listen. In addition, we'd like to ask you to take just a few seconds to head over to iTunes and rate this program. It's a great way for us to get this material into as many hands as possible and help spread the word. Thank you so much for taking just a little bit of your time to give that piece back to us. Michael, do you have any final thoughts before we go?
Yeah, you know, if you're listening to this and you feel overwhelmed, I would just say to you, how you're living now is unsustainable. Think what's at stake, resolve that you're going to take action, and imagine what could happen if you finally got the help that you need. If you finally opened up your schedule and had more margin to do the things that matter most, to enjoy the people that matter most, your life could be totally different. And really for anybody, it's just an intention away. It's setting the intention and then applying these practical strategies.
Well, thank you for joining us today. Until next time, remember, your life, your one and only life, is a gift. Now go make it count.